Refresh your good vibes mit TikTok. Mit den richtigen Vibes wird...
Hey. Oh Mann!
Zu... Jetzt probieren. Die verschiedenen Tic-Tac-Sorten. Von minzig frisch bis fruchtig süß. Tic-Tac. Refresh your good vibes.
Bei Action gibt es immer extrem niedrige Preise. Diese Woche 50 Palazzo Kaffeebecher XL-Packung nur 5,77. Oder weiche Hotel Royal Handtücher nur 2,48. Angebote, die richtig glücklich machen. Für noch mehr extrem günstige Preise einfach in einer Action-Filiale vorbeischauen oder in der App stöbern. Action. Kleine Preise. Große Freude.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, my goodness. A new month already. Time she do a fly, don't she? Man, oh man, it's June. Oh, we just had the, what they call the unofficial start to summer, Memorial Day weekend. Oh, what a terrific weekend. The grills fired up. Perhaps pools have opened up. Perhaps school is over. And, let's get this summer going. Well, we're going to get this podcast going because our guest this week, my gosh, if we aren't in for a treat. Man, oh man, one of my absolute favorite people. A person who is very, very skilled and yet remains humble. So to talk to them, you wouldn't really know just how wonderful they are because they're such a, they're very discreet about it and very down to earth. Of course, I'm talking about you. It's you. Holy cow. Thank you for being here. Oh, you look good. I hope you're feeling good as well. I am. I had a great Memorial Day weekend. I'll talk a little bit more about that farther on down the road and today, but still farther down the road. But for now, I would be remiss if I did not mention our sponsor for the week. Now, if you remember, last week's sponsor was, of course, the sun. And I hope that last week you were able to enjoy the sun a little bit, at least appreciate what it does for us. But our sponsor, the sponsors have been reined in a little bit. And, you'll see the proof is in the pudding here when I announce this week's sponsor. This week's sponsor, soap. Oh, boy, where would we be without soap? We'd be filthier, wouldn't we? And perhaps germier. So, yes, whether it be bar soap or hand soap or soap on a rope, which, by the way, I've only seen, I think, at like the Cracker Barrel store before you go in to eat. I don't think I've ever seen. I know I've never used soap on a rope. I mean, the obvious thing would be that soap on the rope, prison showers would have it, but I don't know that they do. I'll have to ask Tom Griswold. He's the expert on prison showers, and maybe he can enlighten me a little bit. Man, I used to have a joke. Oh, boy, this was early in my open mic days. It was when Da Vinci Code was, I think the movie came out, and I said... I'm really looking forward to the sequel, Da Vinci Code 2, Pope on a Rope. And it meant nothing. I just thought it was weird and silly. And I'll tell you what, it got nothing. I think I gave that one like four or five tries because I thought it was just so, I don't know, silly and just, you know, whatever, odd. And, well, turns out silly and odd, not always what stand-up audiences want. They would rather have a good joke. But anyway, soap, oh, man, a wonderful, wonderful product, that soap. I know I use it daily, and I imagine most of you do as well. Oh, looks like there's a jingle here this week. We'll go ahead and play that. Are you dirty? Nope, I use soap. Well, how about that? Boy, oh boy. I hope you get to enjoy some soap very soon. And, man, the only time soap might be bad is, well, if it's in your eyes. I mean, that stings. And then if it's in your mouth. My mom washed my mouth out with soap once. I forget what I said. I do remember that it wasn't a cuss word or anything. It was, I sassed her about something. And so she decided to wash my mouth out with soap. And it was no fun. Yeah, no fun. So anyway, use some soap soon. And man, the basement is nice and cool down here. You know, I'd still rather be elsewhere. I mean, I'm happy to be with you. Don't get me wrong, but I wish geographically I were elsewhere. We'll see what happens. It is, we're getting to the point where the basement, is going to start feeling a little, musty, you know, cause, there's moisture in the summer and, things are going to get, I don't know. It may get a little, uncomfortable coming up, but today feels all right. Nice and cool. Some new spiders building some new webs. And boy, I'll tell you what, in that left corner over there, I don't know if I want to see the spider that built that web. There's a mouse in it. And I can only imagine the size of, well, anyway. You know what? Let's get away from this dingy basement for a little bit and hop on board the TGA Express. That's right. It's the Arn Track, the only steam-powered monorail in the world. Listen to that. Yes. I mean, it's a monorail for good reason. It takes us out, then it takes us right back. So, yeah, very easy. In fact, there's no engineer on this monorail. It's all computers. How about that? Did you know that? Now you do. Oh, my goodness, if we haven't stopped off at, well, I'll be Vocabville. That's right. Oh, good to be here in Vocabville. And we were actually invited to Vocabville this week by a faithful, loyal listener of that Josh Arnold podcast. Pickle wrote in, and Pickle's a good man. He is a good man. And he wrote in to say that he had just seen a word that he didn't know existed. And I got to be honest, Pickle, I have never heard this word before, and I'm thrilled that you shared it with me so that I can share it with everybody else. This is a great word. It's something that it's a phenomenon, I'll say, that we are all familiar with and have all sort of taken part in at one time or another. It's, it's a noun, but it is something that, we're all familiar with. The word is mondegreen. That's right. M-O-N-D-E, green. G-R-E-E-N. Mondegreen. And this is such a cool word, and I can't wait to throw it around. And particularly on the Bob and Tom Show, when this topic does come up, it has before, and it will again. And I can go, oh, you mean a mondegreen. And it'll simultaneously it'll pique Tom's interest, and also he'll hate it because as pseudo intelligent as he is, he's a very, very, he's honestly a very bright guy, but he doesn't care for words that are never used, but somebody tries to use them, which I do all the time because I think it's fun, and I do enjoy annoying him. So mondegreen is a word or phrase that results from a mishearing of something said or sung. So, famous Mondegreens, boy, oh boy, think of all the song lyrics that you've misheard and have sung incorrectly. That's a Mondegreen. So, there's a bathroom on the right as opposed to there's a bad moon on the rise. That's one. Excuse me while I kiss this guy as opposed to excuse me while I kiss the sky. Jimmy Henry, you know him. We've all heard him. Now, it doesn't have to be just song lyrics. It can be you overheard somebody say something. The example that Merriam-Webster, man, oh man. I mean, they have their place, but they're just not as strict as I'd like. Anyway, the example that they give is very close veins is a Mondegreen for varicose veins. So you can hear, oh man, my varicose veins are really hurting today. What do you mean you're very close veins? No, I said varicose. We just experienced a Mondegreen. My goodness. Yeah, isn't that a cool word? So I hope you get to throw that around this week. And thank you, Pickle, for bringing it to our attention. It's a good one. I'm going to use it a lot. Mondegreen. Man, I'm trying to think. I was recently corrected on a Mondegreen. And, well, I don't remember what it was. So what I could have done was said, not brought it up. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously I brought up the Mondegreen topic, but the fact that I was recently corrected on one that I can't remember didn't need to be said because it was, well, quite frankly, just a waste of our time. I should stop talking about it because, look, I continue to waste our time. And, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. We're going to move on the... the TJA Express. My gosh, where is it taking us now? Oh, it's see, that's the thing. It's I mean, we get right off. That's the good thing about the monorail. It may be steam powered, but we don't have to start. Like, it just goes. You know what I mean? It's like 0 to 25 in like 3 seconds, which may seem slow if it's a car, but for a monorail, I mean, hey, not too bad. So. My gosh, if we're not in Bookburg. Oh, what a lovely place to visit. And this is a special trip to Bookburg. This is where we discuss our favorite books, of course, literature, whatever. And I have to be honest, we're tying this visit into Bookburg with a new segment on That Josh Arnold Podcast that we call Not Guilty Pleasures. Court is in session, and we have found that the pleasure that we are going to discuss today, not guilty. And here's what I mean by that. Everybody says, oh, yeah, it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. I don't really believe in guilty pleasures, rather. If you like something, why feel guilty? Enjoy it. There's no reason. I mean, I get the concept that... it's like, oh, you know what? It's not very good, but I can't help it. I like it. Well, okay, but you like it. Don't feel guilt. Celebrate it. And who cares what everybody else says or thinks? If you enjoy, I'll tell you. My not guilty pleasure for this week. It's a series of books by an author named Steve Alton. And I discovered these books, years ago, and I'm going to say early 2000s. I don't remember the publishing date of the first one in the series. But they're continuing to this day, and in fact, a movie came out recently based on the first book. It's the Meg series about megalodons, the giant prehistoric sharks that, according to... the Meg series lived near the Mariana Trench under a very strong sort of underwater river that served as a sort of barrier between their world and ours. And if one of them doesn't break out and make it to our oceans and terrorize some sea vessels, seagoing vessels, and even some beachgoers and whatnot. Oh, the movie, Jason Statham was in it a couple years ago. Chick and I went to the theater to see it. Had a decent time, but the books are just a lot of fun. There are, well, I believe the latest one comes out this year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that'll be the 7th in the series. Now, I'll be honest, I've read the first 5. There's one called, so I've read The Meg. Oh, man, that introduces us to this crazy, crazy giant shark. And I've read The Trench, the sequel, which turns out there are more megalodons. And I've read Meg, Primal Waters, and Meg, Hell's Aquarium. Hell's Aquarium, do you believe this? Some folks actually thought that they could keep these megalodons in captivity and have shows a la sort of a Jurassic Park type conceit. And I tell you what, things go wrong, all right? I mean, when you're, imagine trying to train regular great white sharks for shows. Well, certainly risky, but well, now turn them into the size of a passenger ship, some sort of a cruise ship. I mean, you're just asking for trouble, and trouble does ensue. And trouble continues in Meg Night Stalkers. That's right. And so I need to read Meg Generations. And then the one coming out this year is Meg Purgatory. And I wonder what happens. What further adventures what that book will entail. It should be a lot of fun. These books are a blast. Steve Alten, Alten. Look them up. And are they high literature? No. Are they terrific, fun, exciting, somewhat silly, but also educational in the ways of teaching you about sharks and stuff like that? Yes. Yes, they're a lot of fun. Great, obviously fun beach reads. And I think you'll get a kick out of them. They're quick reads, and they're very entertaining. The Meg series. Start with The Meg, and then it goes The Trench, and then the rest of the books actually have Meg in the title. I think Steve realized, well, heck, I've got a franchise on my hands here. The movie was sort of in, what do they call that? Development hell for a while, where like Jan de Bont, who directed Twister and Eraser, and and Speed 2 Cruise Control. Well, and also the original Speed. He, a fun director, he was on board to direct, and then that fell apart. And then I think, if memory serves, Eli Roth, the notorious horror film director of the Hostel movies and Cabin Fever, he was going to do a version, which I think would have been a hard R if they let Eli kind of do his thing. But no, they eventually kind of made it PG-13, fun for the family in a sense. And well, hell, when you're if you're making a movie about giant sharks, like giant sharks, don't you want the 14-year-olds to be able to? I mean, my buddies and I, when we were 14, oh, we would have been there. Opening day. Well, heck, Chick and I were there opening day because we are 14-year-olds at heart. So enjoy the Meg series. Do not feel guilty about it, but I do hope you derive some pleasure from it. And that is this week's visit to Not Guilty Pleasures. And we'll see about editing that sound effect. So, oh my gosh, let's get, as the monorail, the TJA Express takes us back to the basement, why don't we go over some, not just one question of the week, but a couple questions of the week, and see what you all had to say. And man, oh man, Pickle, thanks again for Mondegreen. That is a fun one. Okay. Andrew writes in, in regards to last week's story about my night spent at the Lemp Mansion. He says, allegedly, there was grainy camcorder footage from the Lemp Mansion circa February 99 of the Beast with Two Backs haunting the second floor. I see what he's doing there. He's mentioned, he's suggesting that my girlfriend and I, who were there, were, okay, well, seriously though, he goes on, I just Googled the Lemp Mansion basement. And it is nightmare fuel. Man, you know what? It never occurred to me to do that, Andrew, until I read your letter and I did it. I Googled Lemp Mansion basement and I have to, you know, there are a few and only like of the, I don't know, 20 photos I looked at, only two struck me as being like accurate to what I remembered feeling, because again, I was in pitch black and I had to feel my way around. I saw one of a staircase where I went, that's definitely the staircase I climbed, but I can't. And then some may have been pictures of the basement of the Lemp Brewery, not necessarily the mansion, but there are underground tunnels to connect them. So, But the photos that it did, you know what? I would have been just as scared if the lights had been on. It's so creepy looking. But thank you for that, man. He says his grandparents lived in Webster Groves in the St. Louis area. Oh, hey, how about that? That's a beautiful suburb, little town there, township in St. I went to Webster University right in Webster Groves, graduated from there. I've never talked about my college days. We're going to have to do that soon. So, Kevin, good man, he writes in this is a good question. How different do you think the Bob and Tom show would be if swearing was allowed? A terrific question. My initial response is not as funny. And that might surprise some of you. I don't think it would be as funny. Some of the dramatic tension, some of the best dramatic tension in the show is caused by the fact that we have to tiptoe around certain issues and words. And I think it challenges us to to try to come up with creative and new ways to to discuss those things without actually saying them. I love it. I love that challenge, and I am glad that we're prohibited in a certain way. I also like that people who would rather not hear what they would consider offensive words have a show that they can listen to in the car or whatever, and not now. Content wise, obviously we get a little blue or we get a little adult, but we can't, a lot of it's just in the name of childishness. And but if you don't like to hear the F word or the S word or whatever, then don't. And that's actually one of the reasons I don't swear on this show, really, because I, there are a few reasons. I don't want to get in the habit of cursing into a microphone, because then, even though I'm down here in the basement, it's the same kind of microphone that I use in the on the morning show in the main studio. So I don't want to get in the habit of cursing into that, because I will slip. I'll slip. Now, I do. I have no problem hearing cuss words. I mean, yes, if somebody's overdoing them, it can get a little old and stale and lazy. But if they're used well, oh my gosh. I mean, sometimes they're the perfect tool in somebody's comedy act or even in dramatic things. And so, yes, yeah, I have no problem with them generally. But in my act, in my comedy act, when I go out and I do 45 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever, I'll be honest, I have probably, currently, I probably have 5 or 6 F words, and I am really trying to trim it down to like 2, because when I use them, I want them to be as powerful as possible. And if I overuse them, it's just going to weaken the word. And I think you kind of have to show respect to the four letter words. Because they can be overused and then weakened. And I don't want to dilute them. I want them to hold the power that they have and to be as comedically poignant as possible. So I'm really trying now. Josh, why don't you just trim those extra three or four that you have? Because I'm having trouble. When you edit your own stand up, sometimes eliminating one word, weakens the joke. And what I mean by one word is it doesn't necessarily have to be a curse word. There's something about the cadence in the delivery of the joke that if you eliminate that one syllable, it really does affect the pace of that punchline. And I could, and I've tried different things by, like, you know, saying freaking or saying lesser curse words. And there's something about it. It's just, I can't get it to work. But I will. That's the job. Is for me to put the work in and make the appropriate changes. And when I have been able to do that, it's super satisfying. It's really satisfying. There are a few other reasons not to curse so much. And I know the question was about the radio show, but in terms of stand-up, TV, obviously, if a comedian wants to get on Conan or, well, you can do a little cursing on TV. But, well, he's not really. Anyway, if you want to get on Kimmel or any of the network TV shows, you can't use those words. So it's best to not even write them into your jokes so that you don't have to alter the pace and the cadence and all that stuff. And, you know, now that people are coming out to see me live from the Bob and Tom show, they're fans of the show, they're fans of the radio show. Some of them, they're not coming. They don't want to hear the curse words because they know me from the radio where I can't use them. You know what I'm saying? It's, I want to try to keep it radio friendly, but still pepper in some R-rated language, when effective. That's the key, is when is it most effective and in a good way? When's it going to get a really good laugh and not for shock value or anything like that? Something that's been on my mind. And I appreciate that question regarding the radio show, because it really is fun to try to work around those rules. And when we slip up and something is accidentally said, we have ways to make sure it doesn't go over the air. But it's usually pretty funny because it's a legitimate accident, that kind of thing. And we all make mistakes. And so it's funny to go, oh, man. Yeah. Whoops. You messed up. I wouldn't have it any differently if for whatever reason the FCC went, you know what? Anything's fair. I don't think we would change. I don't think we would. And I don't think a lot of people would want us to change. It might be kind of thrilling to hear us be foul-mouthed a little bit, but I think for the most part, us trying to work around those parameters is really what's most humorous. In fact, one of my favorite bits, which happens to be legitimately one of Tom Griswold's least favorite bits, is when the number 69 comes up. And Chick and I, and now Willie, and so we lose our minds. This is one of my favorite bits for a few reasons. It's so stupid and like hack. I mean, joking about the number 69 is so overdone that when we go hog wild over it, I genuinely believe that most listeners know that we're being idiots on purpose, that we know that it's overdone, and that's the fun in it, that we're just being stupid. Tom is worried that people don't know that they think we're really trying to pass it off as something cool and funny. And I bet he's right about a very small percentage of listeners. But I think for the most part, our audience is savvy enough to understand, okay, these buffoons are just being silly. And that bit also, usually what will happen is somebody will say 69 degrees out, or they were on Highway 69 or whatever. And we all woo-hoo, hoot and holler like morons. And then I will try to start singing a song about explaining what that is. Well, oh, here's how it works. You lay on your back. Like, it's a real sort of soulful romantic song, which is, why would it be? And the joke is that I never get to explain how it works. Tom always cuts me off with, okay, that's enough. All right, don't do that. But I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. Every time we do that, Tom is being serious. He is genuinely concerned that I'm going to start singing explicit instructions on how to perform that move. And I wouldn't, but I think that I've, walked the line and or stepped over it enough times to have him mistrust me a little. And there is some worry there that he thinks I'm going. I never would, because, again, to me, the comedy is me getting cut off and never getting to the full instructions. But he's all but told us to stop doing it, and we're not going to. Chick loves it. I love it. It annoys him. It annoys Tom. And if he, you know what he should have done is told us how much he loved it, and then maybe we would stop. One time he even said, I even mentioned recently when we did this, the 69 thing, I go, it's no fun anymore. Tom hates this bit. And he tried to give us the, it's illegal to be discussed. And I go, look, maybe if I actually went through with the song, it would be, but I don't. We never get that. We never even get close. You cut me off so soon. And then, by the way, after that, he goes and says something way 100 times worse than what I was trying to do. So, but again, that's all in the fun. It does. It really is quite amusing. Really good question, Kevin. And Mitch writes in, first off, I love the podcast. Oh, boy, will you listen? Oh, boy, that's how sweet. I could read these all day. Oh, we've all heard the story about the comedian who walked off the show, and in the video of it, he's obviously sitting next to you. Is there any part of that story that you can share? I'm very curious. Well, sure, yeah, and like anything of this nature, all I can do is give you my version of it and how I felt and what I think was going on. I'm not going to speak for, I can't speak for everybody in this scenario, but if you haven't heard the story, what happened is one morning, a guest of ours, a comedian, got upset and walked out. And we were all kind of thrown by it. And here's what happened. He had been in before, and I don't remember if I had been working here when he had come in before. And he had talked about on the air somewhat of a checkered past that he has. And so that would lead to some teasing and ribbing and, stuff like that. And he had some jokes about it and everything. Every experience I ever had with him, by the way, his name is Chad Zumach. Every experience I've ever had with him, nice guy. He was always very friendly with me. Now, I had heard some stories about him being not so friendly, but I never saw that myself. I had only met him a few times, maybe three, something like that. He was also very friendly with some friends of mine and stuff like that. So I tend to take, when somebody goes, oh man, I had a bad experience with that person, or I heard that person did this or that, or I always kind of take that stuff with a grain of salt, because you never know what somebody's going through at any given time. He may have just been having a bad day, a bad week. Who's to say? Now, I'm not suggesting that if you're having a bad, a rough go of it, that that excuses ugly behavior. It doesn't. But look, we've all lost our tempers at times, or been less than friendly at times, and so I try to give people I try to cut them a little slack. And anyway, so that's what I had known of him. I knew of him as a nice guy with a history and with a certain reputation, negative reputation with some people. So he came in that particular morning, and he was in the green room, and a chick went in and immediately made a joke about his past that he had brought up, that Chad himself had brought up before. And fears, because he and I have talked about it, that it may have come off harsher than he meant it to. And apparently Chad took it. He kind of grinned and bared it, I think. I don't remember, but he wasn't. But it come to find out, it probably bothered him more than Chick meant it. He certainly didn't mean it to, and then more than he realized. So, Chad finally comes in on the air. When I say finally, I think he was sitting in the green room for maybe 15, 20 minutes or whatever. And yes, he was sitting next to me and Tom and Chick and Christy and I were all in here. And I think Godwin. Yeah. And the show, we come back from commercial and Tom introduces Chad. And he says, hey, you know, whatever. And we talk for a little bit. Everybody's kind of talking for a little bit. And we get to a news story and we're all sort of talking about it. And I make a joke about something. And Tom says, finally, a joke. And I didn't get the impression that he was addressing Chad with that line. I got the impression that he was addressing all of us with that line. That, okay, geez, can we get to some humor or whatever? He was just being a smartass, as he's wont to do. So as soon as he said that, I laughed, thinking that it was a joke at all of us. And our guest threw off his headphones and literally took them off his head and threw them down onto the table. And he got up and he was saying something like, I don't need this, or what? Why did I forget? I mean, I couldn't really tell. It was sort of mumbled he walked out, and we were kind of laughing because we thought he was playing up being insulted. It turns out he wasn't. He was actually offended and mad, and he left. He walked out of the studio and he walked out of the building. And boy, we were all kind of thrown. I'm not laughing at Chad with this. I am laughing at the situation when I am laughing about what I'm about to tell you. One of my favorite things is when an awkward situation becomes more awkward. It's one of those things where when there's an awkward situation and you try to leave it, but you have to come back to it. There's something about this that really really makes me laugh. Well, he forgot his phone, so he stormed out of the building, only to have to come back like a minute later and ring the doorbell for somebody to answer it. Hey, can I get my phone? After making this, after storming out and essentially making a statement of, I'm not going to put up with this, I don't want to be treated this way, I'm out of here. Kind of giving us the finger in a way. He may say we deserved it. He's totally, you know what? He's of course, allowed to have that opinion. And but to do that and then to have to come back, hey, can I get my phone? that's kind of a bummer. So, yes, he was given his phone and then he ended up leaving. And, yeah, so that's the story. It's kind of become notorious. Now, we continued on. We were on the air. We weren't going to just break or whatever. And so we were on the air. And like, 2 or 3 minutes later, Kostaki Economopoulos was calling in to either talk about the NFL or do his Econo monologue, something. And the poor guy is throwing jokes at us and getting, I mean, we're all so... we're all so confused and unsettled by what happened and like and sort of reflecting on, oh man, that was real and what a weird feeling. And it didn't feel good to have somebody walk out on us and to know that, oh man, that guy, he was genuinely upset. And I mean, we use the, when we say guest, we mean it. You are our guest. So poor Kostaki was really working and getting nothing from us because we were all kind of thrown. And we were trying to sort of get into it, but couldn't. I think a bunch of us, without knowing it, ended up texting him. It's not like we all got together and said, hey, we need to text Kostaki is what I mean. We all did it on our own going, hey, you called it. It wasn't your fault. It was a really bizarre circumstance. We were shaken by Chad getting up and leaving. And so anyway, I don't know if he ever said anything about it or not. Like I said, always friendly to me. I had heard things. I had heard contrary stories. But I have to say, he, except for the time that he walked out on our show, Always friendly. He always shook my hand and hey, good to see you. And, I don't know. I don't know what he was going through, but he certainly didn't like how he felt mistreated. So, look, I would never want anybody who hears that story, who is a fan of the show and likes us, to if you ever see Chad at a comedy club or see him on social media or something, to give him a hard time, he had a rough morning, whatever, whether it was perceived or whether it was, real, I guess, for lack of a better word. He had a rough morning, and haven't we all? So I don't know. None of us. Look, we will occasionally joke about it because, that's how this question even got asked. Mitch had heard about it, but didn't really know the full story. That's the full story. And From my point of view, I know I spoke a little bit there for Chick, but I was only relaying what he had told me, and I don't think he would be upset about me doing that. It was awkward. It was awkward. But I certainly hold no ill will towards the guy, unless he's not telling an accurate version to a lot of people out there. And I have not heard that that's what's happening. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that that's not what's going on, because it did kind of feel like a protest moment. Like, I don't want to accuse him of having it planned, like that was his plan, that he was going to, because there are comedians who do not like our show for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't have a good time. Maybe they didn't get the laughs they thought they should have. Stuff like that. So maybe they felt like they should have been on well before they were. Who's to say? I have no idea. But I do know that there are some comedians who have bad mouth. I've just been told that. So, again, I don't hold any, look, we're not for everybody, but, if you're not being honest with what happened, if you're out there lying about something, then, I certainly don't agree with that. But anyway, that's what happened, and, hope the dude's okay. It was, I haven't heard anything about him. I'm sure he's out there working, and hopefully he's doing, just fine. So, thank you, Mitch. Oh, you know what? Mitch had a kind of a second question here. Obviously, the morning show is comedy-based, but is there any moment on the show that has left you unable to speak because it was so incredibly funny? You know what? No, nothing has really, like, left me completely dumbfounded to where I just couldn't talk. Now, there have been things where I have laughed ridiculously hard because I just find them to be so funny. One is this audio of an orca, a killer whale, purportedly speaking English. And that, every time we play that, which is probably like once every 6 months or something, we get reminded of it and we'll play. It makes me howl. I can't stand it. First off, they're like, he makes some fart-like noises, which, oh my God, they just kill me. I know. And it's also, it's hard to explain. He so blatantly doesn't say some of the words that they're asking him to say that it just makes me laugh really hard. Now, there are times, and sometimes this happens a lot, and it's not just me that'll do this. Everybody does this, where somebody says something that is so funny that we don't laugh. We just go, okay, that is funny. And that's that. I wonder if that's a weird response for somebody to listen to who has never done comedy before in some sort of capacity. Because you would think, well, if it was so dang funny, how come you didn't laugh? Well, we are all in the business of comedy. And sometimes you just admire somebody's handiwork. Sometimes you just hear a joke and you go, okay. And you're in your mind, you go, that was so perfectly said, perfectly timed, perfectly placed in the conversation, quick. You just go, okay, hats off to you. I realize how funny that is, but I am admiring the artistry of it. And not so much enjoying it for the joke that I'm just really admiring it. And yeah, so that happens a lot. You will hear somebody almost every morning go, okay, that's hilarious. And they mean it. So, you know, that's one of the cool things too about this show is, yeah, we tend to give each other an honest reaction. About if a joke doesn't work, and this happens to me a lot, if I say something and they don't find it funny, they let me know. And then some of you are kind enough to go, you know what, that was funny, and screw them or whatever. But good stuff and good questions. Thank you so much for sending those in. And you too can send in questions if you like. At joshpodcast@bobandtom.com. And real quick, I want to thank you guys. You know, I don't do this every podcast, but I probably should. But I just want to take a quick second and thank you guys for listening to this podcast and joining me here and being my guests week in and week out. It really means a lot. And I'm also bad at self-promotion and at social media and stuff like that. I have an inner war almost constantly. In my head about getting better at it or getting off of it completely or whatever. So I go through phases. But I want to thank you guys for listening. And if you would, subscribe so that you don't miss an episode or you know what's going on. And if you're so inclined, leave a review as well. Those things, I'm told, and by people who definitely know, are really helpful, and I would really appreciate you taking the time. So thank you so much for doing that. And feel free to, if you're not already, follow me on Instagram, even though as of late I haven't been on it as much. But like I said, I go through phases, so there will be times on there where I will be posting very, very heavily and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, I've only been on like once a week lately for like 20 minutes, if that, or whatever. So just to kind of check some messages and say hi to some folks. But anyway, it's that Josh Arnold at Instagram. All right. I hope, as I said earlier, that your Memorial Day weekend was lovely. Mine was good. You may have heard that I went to Lake of the Ozarks to spend some time with family. We hadn't seen each other since early 2020. Mid 2020. I apologize. July 4th. That's when I saw my family last. I had seen my brothers in September of 2020, but the whole family, my sisters-in-law and my nieces and nephews, got to see them. It had been almost a year. And we went, my brother Jeff and sister-in-law Tori and their kids have a house at the Lake of the Ozarks. And we go there and fish and swim and barbecue and just have a great, great time. And I got to be, man, last week I suggested you go out and enjoy some nature. And I hope you were able to. I know I did. We froze for a little bit. It was unseasonably cold out there on the lake. It was in the 40s. And that first day fishing, that first morning, my youngest brother, Joe, and I, well, the buffoons that we are, we had only packed for summer. I was going to say we had no idea it was going to be so cold. I'd be lying if I said that. I looked at the weather forecast, saw that for a while in the mornings it was going to be like in the 40s, but that eventually it would warm up to 65 and some days to like 72 and stuff. So I went, well, I don't need cold weather wear. It's the summer. I'm smarter than the weather forecast. That's essentially what I did. And I quickly proven wrong when you're doing 45 miles per hour in a bass boat or 50, whatever it is, out on a windy lake. It gets cold quite quickly. So, but the fishing was good. The fishing was good. No monsters this time. One of my brothers may have had close to a 3-pound largemouth, but other than that, it was all sort of pound and a half, that kind of thing. And I tend, among my three brothers, there are four of us, among the four of us, I tend to catch the most variety of fish. I have yet to catch a fish over 2.5, I think. And I'm, man, all my brothers have 5-pounders and stuff like that. I'm due for a really big catch, but I do tend to catch the most variety. I was I was king of the crappie this weekend, throwing crankbait and rattle traps. The official Bill Lewis rattle traps, by the way. And for anybody who fishes, you may know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, my brothers, they throw all kinds of, they throw topwater and jigs and they'll just dangle worms or dance them around the bottom. Or I just like to crank pretty much. I like to throw out the lure and bring it in. So a lot of crappie, some white bass, a couple largemouth, and what else did I? There was one time I caught a walleye, which is, they're there at the Ozarks, but they're not easy to catch. And when I did it, we were all sort of celebrating and freaking out. It was pretty cool. But those moments out on the boat, and if you know this, when you bass fish, maybe you don't know this, you're not in the middle of the lake when you you can be, but for the most part, we get up to close to the shore, and you fish the shallow areas around the shore, particularly where there's shade or grass growing in the water. And you throw your line, you throw your lure out there as close to the shore as you can without getting snagged, which I'm also a snag king. I will overthrow every now and again and into a bush or a tree. And then what happens is you have to yank on the line really hard to get it to rip out of that foliage. So it'll either do one of two things. It won't rip out, and you have to get really close to it and try to pull it out with your hands or cut it out or whatever, or lose it. So actually, one of three things will happen. It won't come out. You have to get real close to get it out. Another thing is the line will break, and you'll lose your lure. The third thing is, it will come free from the busher tree and shoot back at you at 100 miles per hour. So you'll have this thick plastic lure flying at you with two large treble hooks attached to it. And you have to be wary of that. One of the hardest times I wanted to laugh, but I couldn't, is when I was snagged and I pulled that line back and my lure came flying back at us. And the treble hook embedded itself in my brother Joe's calf. And I stifled a laugh. I felt bad. I did. But he of course, he yelled hard. And he got the pliers and he pulled it out successfully. A lot of times that doesn't go so smoothly. Well, he was able to just sort of get it out. And it was in there. But he did get it out rather painlessly. He wasn't happy, and so that's why I wasn't laughing. But to myself later, boy, I was really, really giggling. but that's how we are as brothers. We're jerks. Yes, I have been hit by lures as well. And one time Joe got me. He got me back. It went into my back. And went through my shirt and into my back, and he was able to pull it out with his hands, but I certainly felt it. So my point was, though, fishing the shore and fishing docks. So you go around the docks and you fish the corners of the dock, and these are places that bass like to hang out, and as we're just trolling along in my brother's bass boat, he's up there in the front, manning the trolling motor. He's up there, and I'm in the back sitting, and we're just casting away quietly, and it's we're listening to the sounds of the lake and of the woods beyond, and my gosh, we saw a lot of snakes, and we saw a bunch of turtles and blue heron and just these prehistoric looking birds. And it was really, really relaxing, just so great. And I think I've talked about this before. If so, I don't mean to bore you with some repeated thoughts here, but fishing may seem rather boring to some. You throw out your line, you reel it in, and you do it again. And I mean, you do it hundreds of times. And to me, it is as exciting as anything. At the same time, super relaxing. I mean, it's just so chill. And what's exciting about it is every cast, there's hope of, is this cast going to be the big one? And it's just wonderful. So for me, it's a series, actually. So I'm out on the boat. I'm already with people I love, and I'm with, by the way, funny people I love. My family's all very funny. And we've got wonderful drinks and snacks on the boat with us, and the nature is just terrific, and we're surrounded by it. And it starts with that first cast. So, first, it's when I throw this lure, is it going to be a good cast? So, is it going to go far enough to be where the bass hang out close to the shore? Or is it going to be too far? Or am I going to be too short? So, first, you want to get a good cast. And when you get that good cast, it's great. It's so great. When it lands, when you're looking at a spot where you go, oh, my gosh, that one little area is under some shade. It's close to some rocks or a fallen tree. If I can hit just next to the fallen tree and not snag on the fallen. And when you do it, yeah, all right, I nailed it. Step one, very satisfying. Then you start reeling it in. And, oh, man, am I going to get a bite? Am I going to get a bite? And when you do get a bite and all of a sudden you feel that hook is set and the fish starts running with it, sometimes you can't tell the size and you go, oh, this could be it. This could be the 6-pound bass that I have been dreaming about. And if I can just reel this in. So then you reel it in, hoping that that hook really is set so you don't lose the fish. And then it's, as you're reeling it in, am I going to win that fight? And am I going to get it on the boat? Because if you lift it up out of the water and that fish shakes off the hook and falls back into the water, you did not catch that fish. If you get it into the boat, over the boat, and it flies off the hook and hits the side of the boat and falls into the water, you didn't catch that fish. You did not land it. And that can be heartbreaking and also pretty comical, because fishermen, every person who fishes has been there. And so when you see it happen to somebody else, you go, oh, I know exactly how that feels. It's such a bummer. It sucks so bad that you didn't quite land it, and it was right there. And it's really heartbreaking when it is something of size, when you go, oh, man, we would have weighed that, and that would have been on my list of great catches. Now, sometimes the fish really puts up a fight, and you reel it in, you get on the boat, and it's quite small, and you go, man, that thing had some heart. Holy cow. And that's also some of the fun. The mystery of what you have on the line. What do I have? Do I have a bass? Do I have a white bass, which puts up a lot of fight? You may think you have a big largemouth when really you have a small white. Do I have, we've had it to where it's like, okay, get the net. This is a monster I have on my line. And it ends up being a gar, which is a fish you can do nothing with, but they're gigantic. And hideous. And so then that usually elicits screams and yells when it's finally pops its head up out of the water. It's just a wonderful, wonderful time. If you've never been fishing, try it. Go with somebody who has and who can help you out. And my nieces have really grown to it. My nephews are good fishermen. And my nieces, in fact, my 10-year-old caught a largemouth. Probably close to 2 pounds. We didn't, I'll tell you why we didn't get a chance to weigh it here in a second. But she was standing on the dock, and she had a worm on her hook, and she was with a bobber. She wasn't throwing a lure. She had the worm in the hook, and she cast it out there and sat and waited. Well, we were all talking on the dock and stuff, and all of a sudden we look over, and she's struggling. Her fishing pole is bent so severely that it looks like it's going to snap. And she is just doing her best to reel whatever it is on there that she has. And she's hanging onto that pole as the fish that she has attached to it is really fighting. And she's just, this thing's going crazy. And she's doing a great job reeling it in. And she had that hook set, because this thing jumped up out of the water. We saw how big it was, and we're all cheering and going banana. Oh, my gosh. Her name's Atlas. So we're, Atlas, you're doing great. Keep it up. And she asks for help. She says, Dad, come over here. So my brother John runs over to her, and she's got the pole lifted out of the water, and the fish is out of the water. And John grabs the line to help her pull it in. And as he's pulling it in, the fish falls off the hook. It flips off the hook and falls right into the water. And I tell you what, Atlas let her dad have it. Dad, I shouldn't have had you help me. You lost it. And he felt awful. He felt so bad. But it's one of those things. So she didn't land the fish. She didn't get it up on the dock. But we were so proud of how she was handling it. She was doing everything right. And she even said so, that she was doing everything right until Dad came over and messed it up. And the thrill and excitement that she had, she came running over to all of us. And she goes, I was just standing there, and I thought I should check my worm. And so I started reeling in, and I went, oh my gosh, I seem to be snagged on something. And I kept reeling in. I went, oh, it's moving. I've got a fish. And I started reeling in, and it was this huge bass. I mean, that's exactly how she was talking. She was so thrilled. And we had all just seen this. But she was recounting it, and her eyes were wide, and she was just beside herself. And, I was so very proud of her. She had, you know what? And we told her, we said, hey, that you lost that fish. And then she corrected us and said, well, Dad lost. I said, okay, well, look, you didn't get the fish, but the way you were handling yourself and the way that you were controlling your pole and reeling in and doing everything you were supposed, you did everything your best. And we are so proud of you. And you should be so proud. I mean, we really were telling her this, and she took it not in a haughty way or a braggadocious way. She really took it to heart, and it was a wonderful moment. Now, if you don't like fishing, it seems a little cruel to me. You hook these little critters and you pull them in where they can't breathe, and you rip the hook out of their mouths and then just throw them back in the water or whatever. Now, I know some people who are totally fine with fishing so long as you eat what you catch. You keep what you catch and you eat it, and there you go. They don't like the catch and release. And you know what? There's a little part of me that doesn't like it either, even though this is weird to say. I love it. But there is a little part of me that goes, ah, man, that's got to be very unpleasant to see a piece of what you think is food to go, oh, I'm going to eat. And when you bite it, not only is it fake, there's a hook attached to it and it's puncturing your mouth. And now you're being yanked and lifted out into the air where you can't breathe by these probably hideous, tall, big, giant creatures who are yelling or they're loud or whatever, and then they're manhandling you, and they've got pliers or they've got their hands in your mouth, whatever, and they're yanking that hook out. And by the way, there are humane ways to take a hook out, all right? You don't just yank it out. When I'm saying, I am being sort of dramatic there, but you get that hook out, and then you're just you're tossed in the air, and you slap back into the into the water, and you swim away, and you go, what the hell just happened? That was a nightmare. Now, a lot of this, of course, is projection. We tend to give animals human attributes because that's what we know. Look, the brain of a fish can't comprehend a lot of what I just suggested it could. However, we don't know what it feels. We really don't. And it's easy to look at a fish, take the hook out of its mouth and go, okay, there's no blood. You can't even really see a hole, if you do it right, by the way, and all this stuff. And it's fine. I'm sure it's fine. We don't know. I mean, how do we know what the nerves and the pain receptors of a fish, how they work, where exactly they are, how intense of a pain it is? You know what I'm saying? Like, we have no clue. When a dentist works on your mouth, they too have mouths and have had dental work done, so they know the limits of a human's pain. Now, some people's pain threshold is much higher than others, but they at least are in the general ballpark of I can't scrape too hard, or I can't drill too hard, or whatever. They know, all right, and they can give us the proper pain relief either before or after the procedure or both. But so it's different for we have no idea what it feels like to be caught to be a fish with a hook. And sometimes, man, it is a bummer. The fish will swallow the hook and it's really deep in there, when I feel bad is when I snag a fish. This happens where you throw your line out there and you go, oh, I've got one, and you reel it in and the hook is in the side of the fish. It wasn't even necessarily going for the the food. You just happened to it was swimming by, or it went for the food, missed, and you yanked and it went to its side. And sometimes there is a little bit of blood there and you go, ah, man, I really hope I didn't hurt the thing too badly. But it doesn't stop me from fishing. Does that make me a cruel person? That's up to you to decide. I don't think it does. But am I just telling myself that so I can continue a recreational activity that I really enjoy? You know, I think conservationists would argue that fishing is a good thing, that you want to control, much like any animal, you want to control the population and you and things like that, especially, yeah, if you are feeding your family or you're enjoying the fruits of the lake, as it were. You're eating what you catch. But catch and release truly is, you know what? If it's not cruel, maybe a little selfish, huh? Maybe a little, did you see what I did? Did you see what I caught? I did that. I don't care what that fish, what it feels or what it thought. But I'll tell you this. When we fish, and I think when most people do, we're never out. There's certainly no malice intended, and it really is it really is thrilling. Maybe it's thrilling for the fish. Maybe it's an exciting thing to get back underwater and go, guys, you're not going to believe what just happened to me. And then one of them go, are you kidding? That happened to me last week. I've always wondered if when you throw a fish back into the lake, if it hangs around that area and will bite the same lure again. Now, my brother John has caught the same bass twice. He knows this because the first time he caught it, the bass, the bass had a history of being caught because when he caught this bass, it had a line in its mouth already. So he reeled it in, he got his hook removed, and he saw that there was some fishing line in the bass's mouth. Now, he couldn't pull it all out. He couldn't get to the hook, apparently. So what he did was he snipped the line so that it wasn't this long thing dangling out of the poor thing's mouth. So he did his best to try to help the thing. So he cut the line really short and he threw it back. Later that day, he reels in a bass. And my gosh, if it's not the bass with a now trimmed fishing line, it was the line he trimmed. It was the exact fish. So if they're not smart enough to recognize the same piece of fake food that got them into trouble the first time, maybe they're not smart enough to realize, to feel the things that we sometimes think they're feeling, you know? But who's to say? I'll leave it up to you. I'll leave it up to you. And if you, if you're against it, I really do respect your opinion and your feelings. I'm having some conflict with a few things in regards to that. I recently did some research. Well, I'm torn even talking about it because I don't want anybody to feel bad for the choices they're making. Okay. But I'll go ahead and tell you what I'm going through. And that's a little dramatic. What I'm pondering is what I should say. I'm thinking about not eating pork anymore. And first off, the health benefits of pork, not great. Not great. They can tell us that it's the other white meat all they want. No, there's a difference health-wise between a nice grilled chicken breast and bacon, all right? So, or even a pork chop. So, health-wise, not great. Delicious, absolutely, okay? But from what I've been reading, and you could tell me that I'm reading the wrong things, and I wouldn't really argue with you, because as we all know, you can find anything to substantiate whatever belief you have out there on the internet. And I tried to read differing views on this. I did read differing views on this. Apparently, and I tend to believe it because it was a pretty what I read was compelling. Pigs, pretty aware. Pretty darn aware of what's going on with them. Now, I would never tell anyone to not eat pork. I'm just not going to do it. If you want to and you like it and you're fine with it, my gosh, do it. Trust me, I have eaten a lot of it. And I've eaten it as recently as over the weekend? Yeah, over the weekend. I had some bratwurst and I had some hot dogs. Certainly pork products in both. But I really am considering eliminating it from my diet because reading about pigs, they seem pretty intelligent and they seem pretty aware. And a lot of the techniques used to dispatch of them seem, it seems to me that the pigs are aware during all of it. And that does bum me out. It does. It bums me out. I'll keep you posted on what I decide. Obviously we're all for animal rights, but a lot of us are also carnivorous. I mean, it's sometimes you just got to reflect and go, okay, do I still feel the same way I used to or have my whole life? It's just nice to have some debates with yourself every now and again, and I am having one regarding pork. If you have any information on it, besides just eat it, which I appreciate, but if you do have any like insight into this, let me know. And maybe you're even a pig farmer and or you even work at a slaughterhouse or something, and you go, no, look, I assure you, we really do a humane job. If you're being honest, let me know, please, because I certainly, again, I am not in any way telling people what to do. This is just some thoughts I've been having for me, what's right for me. So, good weekend fishing and a good, I really hope that you had a good time as well. Something to work on this week. Oh, man. You know, I just mentioned, talking about how I love to eat pork, but I'm having a little bit of a moral dilemma with it. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe not. Regardless, what I think you should do this week is something that you can share with your family or friends, whoever you're around or comfortable with being around right now. Go ahead and treat yourself this week to your favorite meal. That's right. Whatever you consider your favorite meal, cook it up, order it, maybe, whatever. Even if you had it last week, it's your favorite meal, for gosh sake. I want you to treat yourself. Why? Because you deserve it. You deserve it. We're coming out of a very long year. Things are starting to open up. We're all on different sort of comfort levels with it. Everybody's got their own ideas as to where we should be or whatever. So, treat yourself and treat some folks, get some good company. And, make that meal that you love so much. And if you don't know what it is, maybe just make a mess of some of your favorite things. Heck, I mean, maybe your favorite foods are a California roll, macaroni and cheese, and a grilled cheese sandwich. Do it. Have those three things. And really treat yourself. Enjoy yourself. I have some news. It's not crazy, earth-shattering news, but I'm going to share it with you next week. I'm excited about it. And you may hear about it on the big show before our next visit on that Josh Arnold podcast. I will be talking about it more at length next week. The news is not career related. It's not relationship related. It's just some fun, good, different news. Just a slight adjustment to my life. And I don't mean to be to tease you. In fact, you know what? I'll just tell you what it is. And, earlier this week, goodbye!
Hey, I'm Chris Van Vliet, host of the number one podcast, Insight with Chris Van Vliet. On the show, I sit down with the biggest names in pro wrestling, sports, film, and beyond. These are real, long-form conversations that go behind the scenes and beyond the headlines with people like John Cena, The Undertaker, Cody Rhodes, and more. We talk mindset, motivation, and what it takes to succeed. This is Insight with Chris VanVleet. Follow and listen on your favorite platform.